is Thursday, September 22nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the family of a man shot dead by Charlotte, North Carolina police will be allowed to view a video of his killing. We look at the importance of swing states in the upcoming presidential election, and country music singer Kelsey Ballerini scores a significant new hit. It's all ahead. Law enforcement authorities in the city of Charlotte, North Carolina, are resisting calls for the release of video footage of Tuesday's police killing of an African-American man, but will honor a request from the victim's family to privately view the footage. Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Chief Kerr Putney spoke at a news conference Thursday.
Ultimately, as I said before, our practice has been not to release, but to allow for the party who feels they've been mistreated in any way to see that. A request has come our way to do just that, and we're going to honor that request. But there are other things that are going on, too, about, just to be quite frank with you, whether there's going to be an outside investigation. And at that point, it would halt what we're doing moving forward as far as releasing anything. So right now, what we're going to do is honor a request that has been made with the family, because it's still in my purview to do so. But beyond that, it will be much more collaborative in what I can release.
Putney gave reporters a glimpse into his observations of the footage, saying the video did not give him an absolute definitive visual evidence that an individual is pointing a gun. Charlotte officials say there were no plans to immediately impose a curfew after two nights of violent protests that were triggered by the fatal shooting of 43-year-old Keith Lamont Scott. VOA's Giselle Tobias arrived in Charlotte this morning, speaking from the city's downtown. He spoke to me, and I asked him whether there are still signs of the recent violence.
Yes, there are many signs, especially because we can see some glasses, still pieces of glasses on the floor, and we can see some shops are going under reparations right now. It's people trying to fix the damage that the riots provoked last night. But I want to mention the officials just spoke a few minutes ago, and they are appealing for a calm. I mean, there is probably another possibility that we can have riots this night. And after the violent riots, stemming for, of course, this controversial police shooting of a black man injured last night, definitely Governor of North Carolina, Pat McCrory, is making a call and trying to tell people that if they want to go and protest tonight, it's fine, but do it in a way that will not disturb the calm of the city.
Do you see a heavy police and or National Guard presence there downtown?
We don't see the National Guard presence yet, but we can definitely see a lot of police around, a presence of the police, local police. There are pretty much in each corner in downtown North Carolina. And right now, everything looks very calm. It's just a lot of media around trying to cover and inform about the situation. But definitely people is afraid of what's going to happen later tonight.
I know you just got there, but have you been able to talk to any people yet about some of the things that they've seen?
No, I haven't had the chance to talk to anyone yet, but I heard people having discussions, like group of people. They probably worked around in the city having discussions about what happened yesterday, and a little bit afraid of what's going to happen tonight. We can see some stores closed. A couple of banks around this corner where I am right now are also closed. And it looks like not many people came to work this morning.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about that, whether, because I know some businesses were going to remain closed, although I believe some businesses had urged their colleagues to try to open today.
That's correct. Yes, some businesses are completely closed today. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. I guess it will all depend what happens this night, tonight. And if the riots come back again on the streets, probably we're going to see a lot of businesses still closed tomorrow.
Okay, Giselle, there's been a lot of, you know, there have been reports about last night's violence, but what about efforts in the community to try to encourage a peaceful consideration of recent events?
Yes, a small group of the community right now is talking to people, is walking around the street and just trying to reach all people possible and inviting them for a prayer, a meeting to pray tonight. And after, of course, the Scott shooting turned into an angry march last night. So it definitely looks like it's a small group of people trying to bring peace again to this city.
That's VOA's Giselle Tobias. Michael Smith heads Charlotte Center City Partners. I asked him about the impact of the recent violence on the city's downtown.
Well, we were very disappointed by the unrest and the rioting last night. This criminal activity was disruptive and unfortunate, but one of the larger impacts was that we had citizens coming together to peacefully protest, to exercise their rights, and those rights were stolen from them through this criminal activity and really required Charlotte to respond in a different way. It was our hope to respond much as we did when we hosted the Democratic National Convention, where we would bend and not break and encourage civil discourse. But the group that came together last night was intent on violence and criminal activity.
Now, I believe your organization, it promotes business in downtown Charlotte. Is that right?
That's correct. We are the Economic Development Agency, a private nonprofit that's missioned with the vibrancy of downtown Charlotte. And it's quite a contrast, what you saw last night, to the absolute vibrancy that we're experiencing right now as a city, where we're growing our hotels by 50%. Where we have 4.7 million square feet of new office that's either under construction or planned to begin shortly. And from a apartment standpoint, 50 markets were studied by an independent agency, and we were the number one in growth. So we continue to be a place that has great in-migration, great growth in jobs. It's unfortunate that this national issue, I mean, this is an American issue that's playing out in our downtown, and it's something that we as a society are going to have to figure out how do we have an honest conversation about this and address these real concerns that are being expressed.
That's Michael Smith. He's the CEO of Charlotte Center City Partners. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. So, Andrew, I'm sure there's a lot of reaction on social media to all this.
Absolutely. And actually, the one thing that was trending earlier today was the Emancipation Proclamation. Now, a little bit of history for our listeners if they don't know. This Emancipation Proclamation was issued by President Abraham Lincoln on September 22nd, 1862. He said on that day that if the states rebelling against the Union weren't going to free their slaves, and he would issue this proclamation to do so, and it went into effect on January 1st. But September 22nd is the anniversary today of when he first made that statement. And so a lot of people are celebrating that anniversary on social media, especially in light of what's going on in Charlotte and these protests. And a lot of people are using this anniversary to examine on social media the state of affairs for African Americans in the United States, where we've gone since that time, what the community is dealing with, and a lot of debate about those issues, and also what the presidential candidates are saying. Donald Trump has been very outspoken. He was at a black church, I believe, in Cleveland yesterday, speaking about race issues. So a lot of back and forth using that anniversary as kind of a touch point to talk about these issues. The other big trending story is a show called Between Two Ferns. Now, this is comedian Zach Galifianakis does this show where he interviews celebrities. And it's kind of a spoof on celebrity interviews. He asks some very awkward questions. And his guest this week was Hillary Clinton. So people are saying that this is an effort by her, it's a very popular online show, to reach out to young people. Others are saying it was just painfully awkward, and she got herself into trouble just by going on the show, knowing that it was going to be very awkward interview questions. For example, Galifianakis asked her, and the final question, he said, "So what's the best way to reach you? Is it email?" So it was, you know, and he was just met with silence from Hillary Clinton. So, but her campaign's way of trying to reach out to young voters and maybe get some laughs along the way.
Yeah. Okay. Well, interesting to see how that all pans out there. Yeah. All right. Thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor, Andrew Palshevsky. Here are some of the top stories trending. A U.S. general says the Russians were responsible for a convoy attack in Syria. The president of Iran urges implementation of a nuclear deal at the United Nations. The Afghan government concludes a groundbreaking peace deal with a notorious warlord. And Somali militants attack a Kenyan police station. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Almost every day, an asteroid passes within a few million miles of Earth. If the cosmic debris that whizzes past our planet worries you, you may want to check out a new information service from the International Astronomical Union's Minor Planet Center, along with technology giant Oracle. Called the Daily Minor Planet, a nod to Superman's Daily Planet, this free subscription-based service will provide what is described as up-to-the-minute information about near-Earth asteroids, both big and small. Representatives from the news service say on days when a piece of space rock is expected to fly by Earth, they'll publish information about the asteroid, along with the time and distance of its closest approach. To learn more, visit minorplanetcenter.net. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, a country music singer has a new hit. Polls have shown the presidential race between Republican candidate Donald Trump and his Democratic rival Hillary Clinton are tightening. Of importance this year are the so-called swing states, or battleground states, which can play a significant role in the election's outcome. The Midwestern state of Wisconsin is one of those states. I spoke with Barry Burden. He's professor of political science and director of the Elections Research Center at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I asked him to explain the importance of the swing states.
The president is chosen by the Electoral College. Even though we count up the popular vote nationwide and there's a lot of attention to national polls, the winner is actually selected by a majority of electors. And each state gets a certain number of electors that reflects, in part, the population of that state. So states with more people have more electors. Some states are not battleground states because they're very likely to either favor the Republican candidate or favor the Democratic candidate and give those candidates all of their electoral votes. That means that the campaigns are free to focus on a smaller number of states that are really up for grabs, where either party could win. And typically that's between 5 and 10 states that we call battlegrounds or swing states.
Now, your state, Wisconsin, is one of those. At the moment, and I know I'm sure polls are going up and down, but at the moment, is Wisconsin leaning in any particular way?
It has been leaning throughout the campaign. In fact, I think every poll I've seen has shown Hillary Clinton ahead of Donald Trump. And that's been true from the primaries through this month. But what's also been true is that many of those margins have been quite close, and in the last couple of weeks, it looks like it's tightened up to the point where Clinton might only be ahead by 4 or 5 percentage points.
And what could you attribute that tightening? What's responsible for that, do you think?
Well, I think it reflects a little bit of the tightening that's been happening nationwide as Republicans who were reluctant about Donald Trump's candidacy have come around to him. He's now getting about as many Republican votes as Hillary Clinton is getting Democratic votes. So the levels of loyalty between the two parties have essentially evened out. And I think there have been some concerns about Hillary Clinton's campaign, whether it be the Clinton Foundation ties or the email server or the other controversies that have just continued to make some voters reluctant about her. And that all has been just enough to bring down the big margin she had after the Democratic convention down to a closer race in Wisconsin and around the country.
Now, there are two well-known Republicans from Wisconsin, the governor, Scott Walker, also the Speaker of the U.S. House, Paul Ryan. In the past, Wisconsin has had such well-known senators as Joseph McCarthy, a Republican, but also a Democrat, William Proxmire. They were all very well-known politicians. So I guess, you know, has Wisconsin kind of generally followed one party or the other, or it's pretty much been evenly divided?
It's been a divided state. It often looks one way in midterm elections and looks another way in presidential elections. On the one hand, the state has a remarkable streak of now voting for the Democrat for president in seven consecutive presidential elections. That's actually one of the longer streaks in the country. Despite that, it's considered a swing state in most years because the Democrat didn't win by a lot in many of those elections. Some of them were quite close, especially the two Bush elections in 2000 and 2004, where he narrowly lost the state. And in fact, those were elections where Democrats won nationwide. Two of those were Obama elections, and two of those were Clinton elections in the 1990s. So it is a streak of Democratic wins at the presidential level, but many of them have been close. And it's a very different story in midterm elections. In the 2010 and the 2014 midterm elections, Republicans did very well here. Governor Scott Walker won initially in 2010 and was reelected in 2014. Republicans won control of the state legislature in 2010, and they picked up one of the two U.S. Senate seats by electing Ron Johnson in 2010. So it really is a complicated state when it comes to partisanship. It seems to lean a little bit blue in presidential years and lean more red in midterm years.
That's Barry Burden, professor of political science and director of the Elections Research Center at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. This is VOA.
Do you know the political process that determines who the next president of the United States will be? Tune in to VOA's extensive coverage of the campaigns, the voting, and the final tallying to find out how citizens choose their next president. Right here on VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Country artist makes history. Nikki Strong of VOA 1 is here with all the details. So, Nikki, who is it and what have they done?
Okay, well, it's Kelsea Ballerini. And I like to say, in the words of Alicia Keys, this girl is on fire. So, her current single, Peter Pan, just hit number one on the Billboard Hot Country Songs chart and number one on the Billboard Hot Country Airplay chart at the same time.
Wow.
And she is the first solo female artist to actually do this. And just to put it in some perspective, on the Hot Country Songs chart, Florida Georgia Line has remained number one for 18 weeks straight. So Carrie Underwood hasn't been able to knock them off. Sam Hunt released something, has not been able to knock them off. Luke Bryan, these are all heavy hitters, unable to knock them off. Here comes Kelsea Ballerini. She's a new artist. This is her debut project. When I first heard the song Peter Pan, I thought it was a hit, but I did not expect it, because she was new and a woman, to be able to actually hit number one and to knock Florida Georgia Line an 18-week winning streak. So I think that is absolutely incredible. And the song itself really did not fly up the charts. I mean, it was almost like the, you know, I think I can, the little train.
Mm-hmm.
And And she actually accomplished it, so it's awesome.
Well, she's also the first female artist to have her first three singles from her debut solo project hit number one since Winona Judd in 1992. That's going back a bit.
Yeah, so it's a long time coming. I think it's awesome. And this is, again, her third song to hit number one. Long time coming for a woman artist in general. This should be more frequent, I think. She is also the first female artist since Carrie Underwood to have her first single from her debut project hit number one on the country airplay chart. And her brand new single, which has just been released, is called Yeah Boy, which I think is very radio friendly, should also do well.
Well, Kelsey's also working with Taylor Swift too now as well.
They are working together on a song, which I think is great. That should really propel her career even further, especially as she prepares to headline her first tour first headlining tour. And who knows, maybe Taylor will, you know, make an appearance. That would be fun.
That certainly would be. Well, you can hear more music from Kelsey Ballerini on Country Hits with Nikki Strong on VOA 1. You can also reach Nikki on Twitter and Facebook at VOA 1 The Hits. Thanks very much, Nikki.
Thank you. Always on the fly.
And that is our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
An editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States will lift executive order-based sanctions on Burma, which have been in place for nearly 20 years. President Barack Obama made the announcement after meeting in the Oval Office with former Burmese political prisoner and now state counselor for Burma, Aung San Suu Kyi. In welcoming the Nobel Peace Prize laureate, President Obama spoke of the remarkable journey Burma has made in recent years, a journey helped in part by the advocacy of the United States and others in the international community, but most of all because of the courage and strength and resilience of the Burmese people. Milestones on that journey have been a transition from a military dictatorship to elections that brought Aung San Suu Kyi herself into the government, as well as a representative legislature that, despite constraints, is, President Obama said, giving voice to the hopes and dreams of a new generation of Burmese people. Lifting the sanctions, he added, is the right thing to do in order to ensure that the people of Burma see rewards from a new way of doing business and a new government. The United States is also restoring Burma's trade benefits under the Generalized System of Preferences, which provides commercial and trading advantages for poor and developing countries as they enter into the global economy. Burma's benefits were removed in 1989 after the military junta cracked down on pro-democracy protesters. President Obama said that reinstating trade benefits for Burma, along with lifting economic and financial sanctions, will give U.S. businesses and nonprofit institutions greater incentives to invest and participate in what the U.S. hopes will be an increasingly democratic and prosperous partner for us in the region. Burma still faces significant challenges, including a long-standing civil conflict and discrimination against the ethnic Rohingya minority in Rakhine State. The new government has committed to tackling Burma's long-standing issues inherited from the previous government. President Obama praised Aung San Suu Kyi for convening a peace conference to address armed conflict in the country and reaching out to ethnic minorities, including the Rohingya, who have faced discrimination. "We are very hopeful about the future," said President Obama. "More work remains to be done, but Burma is on the right track."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.